Truth Seeker. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to the program tonight. Don't forget, October 29th, Thursday. That's 2 weeks from tonight. We will not be live on this program because 2 weeks from today, on the 29th, there's supposed to be a national strike where everybody just stays home. Now, somebody can make the argument, well, but your studio is home, which it is, but that's not the point. The point is just for one day not to do anything, to let the power in this country understand that we've had enough, and we're going to take one day and protest. Now, I think so far, across the country, out of 300 million people, I think we're up to eight people who are going to do this. But that's 2 weeks from tonight. I'll remind you again. I guess the best way to do this story is just to do it. This comes from alternet.org via, well, it comes from the Washington Times via alternet.org to me. I don't do the Washington Times. But like a stop clock, occasionally they're right. And the story is about a guy named Ian Pearl. He's 37 years old, and he's fought for his life every day. He's confined to a wheelchair and hooked up to a breathing tube. He has muscular dystrophy, and he just refuses to give up. But his insurance company wants to kill him and is going to attempt to do that. The insurance company is Guardian Life Insurance. It's a New York-based insurer, and it's legally barred from discriminating against individuals who submit large claims, like Mr. Pearl. So in order to get rid of this particular insured, the company has canceled the insurance throughout the country that covers people like Mr. Pearl who have this particular situation. They've canceled several lines of insurance. So not only are they sending him to his death, but they are ordering other people to die also because they're not going to insure him anymore. This is insurance in America, health insurance. In an email, one Guardian Life Insurance Company executive called high-cost patients like Mr. Pearl dogs. That's a quote. That the company should, quote, get rid of. That's a quote. Dogs. Now, his premiums have been running, premiums that his parents have been paying, run as almost $4,000 a month. His father's wealthy. Well, not wealthy. His father can afford $48,000 a year in insurance premiums for his son. Remember, the son is 37. The father is about 60. I think the mom is in her late 50s. But Guardian Life Insurance executives consider this claimant, this insured, to be a dog that they need to get rid of, and other dogs. So it went to court. Anyway, this thing went to court, and a federal court ruled that the company's actions are legal. They can stop paying the claims of Mr. Pearl and end this kind of insurance because it's costing the company money. So on December 1st, barring an order by the Federal Department of Health and Human Services, Mr. Pearl will lose his benefits. Now, his treatment is for round-the-clock in-home nursing care for operation of his ventilator. He needs hourly breathing treatments and continuous intravenous medication. A Guardian spokesman said policies like Mr. Pearl's, which offer unlimited home nursing. See, that's what the insurance company offered. And Mr. Pearl's parents bought it. And they've been paying on it for 37 years. A Guardian insurance company spokesman said the policies like this had simply become too expensive. As a last resort, Mr. Perot would be admitted to a state hospital under Medicaid, but the parents consider that a death sentence. His mother said, quote, Ian would be lucky or unlucky to survive more than a matter of weeks or months. One-on-one skilled nursing is essential, end quote. Her husband said the couple have enough savings to pay for their son's care for a few more years, and after that, they could mortgage the family's home. Now, this guy, let me tell you, he became the 37-year-old man whose insurance is being canceled. He became the first wheelchair-bound pupil to be mainstreamed in the Broward County Elementary Schools down in Miami. Well, Fort Lauderdale, I guess. And he was elected president of his high school class at University School of Nova Southeastern University in Fort Lauderdale. He has type 2 spinal muscular atrophy, which often kills its victims in infancy. He grew to adulthood only to suffer respiratory arrest at age 19. He has required a tracheal tube ever since. See, the insurance company took the money at the beginning for obvious reasons. Well, this dog will die, so let's take the money and see how far we have to pay this dog, this dog's parents. Now, his father bought a Guardian Insurance Company small business health plan through his, he has a remodeling company in New York City. Over the years, Guardian has scaled back the benefits in new types of plans like this that it's offered to the point where it no longer offers in-home nursing coverage. But you see, Ian has been around struggling for life for 37 years. In New York State, where the dad's business operates, 54 other employees were offered the Guardian plan. Their policies cover nearly 500 employees and dependents, including two other severely ill people. 54 other little small companies like Mr. Pearl's. The Pearls moved to Fort Lauderdale 30 years ago when Ian was 7 because the humidity there is beneficial to their son. The father, Warren, has commuted back and forth from New York every weekend since, 30 years. The father said Guardian has for years used private investigators to find pretexts to deny coverage. An investigator came to their door, he said, to get proof that he does, in fact, fly back and forth to New York and that his two-employee company really operates in New York. Investigators went to Mr. Pearl's job sites. Dad said, quote, the insurance companies are cheating in order to have obscene profits, end quote. Now, what are the profits? Well, Guardian's 150-year-old mutual company reported profits of $437 million last year, which is a 50% increase over the $292 million in 2007. It paid dividends of $723 million to policyholders and had $4.3 billion in capital reserves, that's, you know, cash, according to its annual report. The company's investment income totaled $1.5 billion last year, an increase from the year earlier. A lot of money floating around there. Mr. Pearl's treatments cost about $1 million a year. The insurer, Guardian, also canceled similar policies in New Jersey and South Carolina and has ceased offering any health plans in Colorado, but didn't cancel all the policies in every state in which they were offered, said the Pearl's attorney, John Freed. The company took the action only against those plans where the claims were the highest. You hear that? Okay. A judge found that the company had not violated the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, that's ERISA, because it canceled entire policy lines, even though they were targeting Ian Pearl. That was their target. In order to get Ian, they had to cancel policies of hundreds of people, policy lines, all kinds of stuff, in order to get rid of this one client, because the client wouldn't die. More on this in a second. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey-free zone.
Well, we hope that's the case. 21 past the hour. So back to this alternate.org that comes to us through the Washington Times. 37-year-old guy who's been dealing with muscular dystrophy all his life. He is confined to a wheelchair hooked to a breathing tube. His parents have been paying almost $4,000 a month insurance. The insurance company, Guardian, has decided they've had enough of this guy, who they call a dog, and other insured customers like him, and they need to get rid of them. They need to get rid of these dogs, including Mr. Pearl. The family sued, and a judge ruled that no, they could go ahead and cancel if they wanted to. This is what health insurance reform is about, you see. This is what everybody who is working against health insurance reform in the United States, this is part of what they want to see continue. Now, the company is, I think it would be safe to say that it's in pretty good financial shape. $500 million in profits last year, which was a 50% increase over the previous year. In addition to those profits, it paid dividends to its investors, or to its policyholder, well, investors, of $750 million. It had $4.3 billion in capital reserves, and its investment income netted the company $1.5 billion. Okay? Now, anyway, the judge found, when this went to trial the first time, that the company had not violated the ERISA Act, Employee Retirement Income Security Act, because it canceled entire policy lines, not just Ian's. The Pearls, who are dealing with this, also claim Guardian violated the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, HIPAA, not the one about your privacy. But the judge found that only Health and Human Services can enforce that law and that private citizens cannot sue under it. Okay, did you get that? The Pearls appealed to HHS, Health and Human Services, under the Bush administration, and they were told that HHS could do nothing. Sorry, goodbye, get out of my face, gone, go away. We love insurance companies. Get out of here. Tell your son to go die. They petitioned again in a letter to the new HHS Secretary, Kathleen Sebelius, on October 5th, with support from their congresswoman, Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, a Florida Democrat. They've not heard back yet. The Washington Times got in touch with HHS, and the agency said, quote, our department has been contacted by the Pearl family, and we have heard their very serious concerns. We are actively investigating this matter, end quote. Okay, we'll see. Now, in an email to four Guardian executives entered into evidence in the Pearl's lawsuit, company vice president Tim Byerly discussed how the company could eliminate this entire block to get rid of a few dogs, end quote. Entire block of insurance to get rid of a few dogs. He concluded, quote, Paul, keep in mind that my intent is to be as narrow and laser-like as possible. We may need to broaden some things in New York due to state of domicile and some other historical nonsense with some of these policyholders, end quote. In other words, they want to tighten down on the rules like where somebody lives in order to cancel policyholders who are, oh, Jesus Christ, filing claims. Asked about the use of the phrases such as get rid of and dogs, a Guardian spokesman said, I'm not aware of any language related to any of the things that you just mentioned. No, of course, it's in the emails that have been entered into evidence in trials. The spokesman for Guardian said Mr. Pearl's plan had simply become too expensive. The spokesman went on to say, we certainly sympathize with Mr. Pearl's condition. As a business, though, we have to offer plans that enough customers want, end quote. He also said, quote, this has been through the courts. Guardian's activities were upheld by the courts as well as by the New York State Department of Insurance. We certainly don't think this particular case has anything to do with health care reform, end quote. The attorney for the Pearl family argues in his appeal that the judge misinterpreted the ERISA law The attorney says, I think we're entitled to a trial as to whether Guardian's discontinuation of its policy was, in effect, discrimination against Ian Pearl. I see you and I know right away that it was. The Pearls say they're out for justice. The dad says, this is a matter of life and death for my son. I have to have faith that Health and Human Services will enforce the law. As far as I'm concerned, this is attempted murder. They targeted us. They never expected to get caught. I believe that justice will prevail. End quote. Just one more example, right? One more example. In hundreds of thousands, in millions of examples, how predatory capitalism, which is what the health insurance business is all about, flourishes in this sick country. And how nobody apparently is willing, not even Barack Obama, and certainly not this Congress, to bring this to an end. All they have to do, single-payer health care. Get these goddamn companies out of this business. Get them out. That's all.
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
In Maine, there is a there's an effort being made to outlaw or ban gay marriage. There's also an effort being made to stop that effort. A campaign to stop the effort that would ban gay folk from getting married is called No on One. Apparently, the ballot initiative number one coming up in November is is trying to pass a law that Maine could not legalize. I don't know how they do that in Maine. In most states, it requires legislative action, but in Maine, apparently, a vote will do it. So there's an effort to stop this craziness. And No on One, those are the good guys. They released a new ad featuring a Catholic mother sitting there. I saw the ad, Catholic mom sitting there with her son, her gay son, and his partner, and their son, their little boy. All four of them are sitting there, and she wants, the Catholic mom wants nothing more than for her gay son to have the same rights as everybody else. You can imagine how this is played with the Catholic crazy people in Maine. A group up there is demanding that the ad be taken down. You know, get it off the air. The Catholic group is CatholicVoteAction.org. All right, let me play the ad, and I'll tell you what CatholicVoteAction.org has said. Here's the ad.
Raymond and Rodney are very special. They have a beautiful home, a loving home. My grandchild, he's safe there, and they take good care of him. Isn't that what it's all about? I've been a Catholic all my life. My faith means a lot to me. Marriage to me is a great institution. It works, and it's what I want for my children, too. I know that the people of Maine will see that and will come through for us.
There you go. I've been a Catholic all my life. My religion means a lot to me. I believe in the institution of marriage, and I want my son to be happy, and his partner, and their son, who's my grandson. And if you see the ad, I think it's Crooks and Liars, I think. If you see the ad, it's a very nice little group, nice little nuclear family. There's mom and son-in-law, hopefully. and the two guys' child. And there's mom. You know, I've been a Catholic all my life. All right, now, this is what CatholicVoteAction.org is saying. For decades, no, I shouldn't do it that way. For decades, gay and lesbian groups have attacked the Catholic Church for refusing to accept their skewed views on human sexuality and marriage. Having lost that battle, they have now launched this desperate and despicable attempt to curry favor with Catholics by pretending that the Catholic faith supports their radical agenda. Everyone knows the Catholic Church is opposed to counterfeit marriages. For homosexual groups to suggest that the Catholic Church believes otherwise is disingenuous, dishonest, and an insult to the intelligence of Catholic voters in Maine. We call on Project Maine Equality to stop lying about our faith and to immediately pull this ad from the airwaves and from YouTube. Son of a bitch, really? All of that from a mom sitting there? Play it again, Kathy. I want people to hear this again. This is what prompted this hysterical, probably a pedophile, crazy son of a bitch to go off. Listen to what mom says. Here you go.
Raymond and Ronnie are very special. They have a beautiful home, a loving home. My grandchild, he's safe there and they take good care of him. Isn't that what it's all about? I've been a Catholic all my life. My faith means a lot to me. Marriage to me is a great institution. It works, and it's what I want for my children, too. I know that the people of Maine will see that and will come through for us.
I've been a Catholic all my life. My faith means a lot to me. That's the only context in which this filthy church is mentioned. She has been a Catholic. And this pig from CatholicVoteAction.org says, for homosexual groups to suggest that the Catholic Church believes otherwise, well, what the hell are you talking about? See, this is why I despise religion. I hate it. And I hate everybody who's a spokesperson for this kind of craziness. Insanity. If you see the ad, like I said, nice couple of guys, little boy and mom. Ah. You bastards, you bastards. Counterfeit marriages, huh? I hate them. Now, you think that's bad? I'm sorry, I'm ruining your Thursday night. I know I am. I know I'm just screwing it to the wall. I'm sorry. This is from New Orleans. New Orleans in the news today, right? The president down there and everything. You see that little boy who, at a town hall meeting, a little boy went up to the president and said, why does everybody hate you? That's all I see on TV, and people hate you. A little kid, Kathy. You didn't see that. He was, I don't know, 8 years old, 9 years old. Oh, that's right. You were watching the balloon thing. That's all I'm going to mention. Never mind. All right. A Louisiana justice of the peace said he refused to issue a marriage license to who? To whom? Who would you guess? Who'd he refuse to issue the marriage license to? An interracial couple. A white and a black. And this filthy bastard says, no, I'm not going to do it, out of what he called concern for the children the couple might have. Keith Bardwell, Justice of the Peace in Tangipahoa Parish, says it is his experience that most interracial marriages do not last long. Well, you pig bastard, all the interracial marriages I know have been in effect for a long time, you pig bastard. And then he goes on, he tells the Associated Press today, I am not a racist. I just don't believe in mixing the races that way. But I'm not a racist. And then he says, I have piles and piles of black friends. That's one hell of a way to express that. Piles of black friends. And then he says this, they come to my home. I marry them. They use my bathroom. I treat them just like everyone else. That's what this psychopathic son of a bitch says. Oh, they come to your house and pee-pee? Oh, my God. Do they poo-poo also? Oh, my God. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with that? Black folks stink in your bathroom. How do you deal with that with your piles and piles of black friends? Keith Bardwell, the Justice of the Peace, says he asks everyone who calls about marriage if they are a mixed-race couple. If they are, he won't marry them. He says he has discussed the topic with blacks and whites. And he came to the conclusion that most of black society does not readily accept offspring of such relationships, and neither does white society. Well, maybe where you live, you pig son of a bitch, maybe down there in the butthole of America, I don't mean New Orleans, I just mean where this freak lives. He went on to say, quote, there's a problem with both groups accepting a child from such a marriage. I think those children suffer, and I won't help put them through it. He said if he did an interracial marriage for one couple, he'd have to do it for everybody. I try to treat everybody equally, so I won't let any of the sons of bitches get married. How's that? I'm not a racist, he says. I just don't believe in mixing the races. I have piles and piles of black friends. They come to my home. They pee in my bathroom. I treat them just like everyone. Well, y'all can't see, but right now I'm sitting here and I've got a flush on my face. Look at me, Kathy. Look at me through the glass. Look. Okay. It's not blood pressure. I am embarrassed to be a Caucasian right now. Son of a bitch. And no, I'm not going to say anything about Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh wanted to accept this. He wanted to own him some Negroes, and he was born too late to have slaves, so he tried to buy into the St. Louis Rams, and just about everybody told him to go piss off. And you know, Rush, I don't know what he said. I really don't care. But here's Limbaugh. You know, I'm so proud of these millionaire football players that said, no, I'm not going to play for him, that he had to withdraw. And not just the football players, but the, 32, 36 teams in the league and the team owners all have to vote when a new owner comes in. And they hadn't voted, but the word was they were going to say, no, hell no. Hey, Rush, did you know that maybe 60, 65, 70% of the NFL is comprised of black folk? And since you are a racist mofo, since your comments, not just about football players, but about black folk for your entire career, pig man. You didn't get to own any Negroes, huh? Oh, isn't that a shame? And then we have this guy down in New Orleans said, well, I'm not going to marry a white and a black because, no, I'm not a racist. They come to my house and pee. See, that proves it. I'm not a racist. I have piles of black friends.
Oh, lots of times I wish I could say I'm not white. Fires burning and the local people turning on the merchants and the shops who used to sell their brooms and mops and every other household item. Watch a mob just turn and bite them. They say it served them right because a few of them were white. And it's the same across the nation, black and white discrimination.
Nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, a couple of emails here as we're approaching the break. This is from David, writes, Mike, as I'm writing this, I'm sitting here, in my wheelchair, being absolutely disgusted by Ian Pearl's plight. Like Mr. Pearl, I too was integrated into elementary school as one of the first disabled children, so I can share in his story. Later in my life, I worked as a caseworker for an agency that is supposed to help people with disabilities, but in the end, does not. I have cerebral palsy and a seizure condition, but if anyone called me a dog, I'd hit them in the balls. In 2005, I had pneumonia and was sent to a convalescent home, a place where I'd kill myself before ever going to again. I can understand their situation because I'm living it, as well as millions of other disabled Americans here. What I will never understand is why these dishonorable bastards of an insurance company choose to commit murderous crimes instead of paying up. I guess they don't realize we all can become disabled in an instant through something like a car accident or simply old age. I want the Pearl family to know that there are people who will speak up for them and who still believe in the idea of the law. If I can do anything to assist them, I'm here to do so. Battle on. Never give in. David. And he includes his phone number. Please pass my number on to them. David, I was just quoting from the article. I wouldn't have a clue as to how to get through to them, but thanks for writing. I appreciate that. And then Tony from Maine, regarding this effort in Maine to deny, once again, always, gay people their rights as people. Jesus Christ. People can't get married because what now? Because they're gay. Oh, because they're homosexual. So therefore, they can't get married. They can't do this again. And tell me again why that. Oh, the Bible? God damn, really? Tony writes, "Hi, Mike. When I turned on the computer earlier today, the first story to pop up on my homepage involved a boy who was trapped in a balloon." So he watched it. It was wall-to-wall coverage of this balloon flying through the Colorado skies. But as I watched, I thought to myself, where's the boy and where's the basket that the boy was supposed to be in? Yet the media was insisting that the boy was in there. After watching for 20 minutes and listening to all the experts that CNN had on as guests to talk about this balloon craft, I decided to go take a nap. When I woke up, I turned on the TV and the headline was, "Should Balloon Boy Be Spanked?" Apparently the kid was never in the balloon. He was hiding in the attic. I laughed because the news had just been pranked by a six-year-old, or punked, really, by a six-year-old. They had just spent almost an entire news cycle covering a non-story. The headline should have read, "Should the news media of this country be spanked?" And it reminded me of what you were talking about in last night's show. You spoke of the non-coverage of the March on Washington this past weekend by 200,000 gay men and women and their supporters, and how the media pretty much ignored the story. Yet here they are today, spending endless hours covering a story of a spaceship-shaped balloon flying through the air, a story that had no impact on anyone except for the family of the missing child and perhaps the law enforcement agencies in Colorado. Yet when thousands flocked to D.C., to air their grievances for equality in this country, the media turns a blind eye. And one more thing. I was glad to hear you talk about the gay marriage bill that is coming up November 4th in Maine. As you may know, I live in Maine, but what is really despicable about the campaign being waged to against gay marriage is the way the bill is being depicted on TV ads by the Yes on One group. Now, Yes on One means, you know, change the state constitution so people can't get married. Tony writes, they are using the same arguments that were used in California, saying that this bill is about teaching gay marriage in Maine public schools. Oh, my God. Hopefully the people of Maine will see through this. The bill has nothing to do with schools. It was a bill that passed earlier this year by the Maine legislature and the governor, who gives gay men and women the legal and signed by the governor, which gives gay men and women the right legal right to marry. The ads are so misleading. Some ads don't even mention gay marriage. They just tell people to vote yes on one because their school kids are in danger. It's disgusting the way these people operate. Thanks for mentioning on tonight's program. Tony from Maine. Yeah, they're coming for our children, Jesus Christ Almighty. They're going to eat them alive. You know, what would happen, Kathy, if we eliminated all of Molly's adult gay friends? And we don't even know how many of her kid friends are gay yet, do we? But Molly, I'm trying to think. I can think offhand of five or six right away. What's Molly going to do? What's Molly going to do when she finds out they're queer? Anything?
Well, and there's members of her family that are gay.
Oh, that's right.
Let's not forget we'd have to excommunicate.
That's right. We have family members who are gay. That's right. See, it just doesn't occur to me that our gay family members are anything but family members. I always think outside the family. I think, well, you know, what's she going to do when she finds out that some of the gay folks she knows shouldn't get married or somehow evil. that's why we're doing our best to raise our little daughter as a complete, I guess agnostic at this point, right? She goes to school where she learns about God, but, it's okay because, you know, it's innocent. They're not brainwashing her. They just, like the first time she gave a little prayer at dinner for us and she ends it by saying, how does it go? Sing it for me again. Can you sing it?
Thank you, Father. Thank you, Father, for our food.
I thought she was singing to me.
For our food.
Many, many blessings.
Many, many blessings.
And then this part.
Old man. Old man.
Yeah, we're sitting there the first night she did that.
I love it.
And she sang a little prayer. And she started out by saying, thank you, Father. And I looked at her and said, well, you don't have to put your head down and sing to me. Just look at me. And she looked at me with that look like, oh, Daddy, Jesus, will you? Well, not Daddy, will you stop? And then at the very end, instead of saying, oh, man, she says, old man. I thought, well, that's right. She's singing to me. We'll be back after the break. We have a lot more stuff here that is just bizarre. Just bizarre. And what may possibly be our last moment with Bob.
This stressful.
We got more. Gordon in Oklahoma City sent this to me. Mike, this year a Granfield, Oklahoma ethics team. Oh, this is the Malloy Show. I'm sorry. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Blah, blah, blah. Gordon writes, this year a Granfield, Oklahoma ethics teacher, Deborah Taylor, was fired for teaching about the Laramie Project. Also this year in Oklahoma City, another teacher named Joe Quigley was terminated on charges that he, quote, repeatedly neglected his duties and didn't follow school policies, such as posting of zeros in his gradebook and sending mass emails, end quote. Quigley sued to retain his job. The judge found the allegations unsupported by the facts that Quigley was wrongfully terminated and ordered Quigley reinstated. In defiance of the judge's ruling, the Oklahoma City Public Schools Board of Education voted not to reinstate Quigley and also voted to appeal the judge's ruling. Quigley is now on unpaid leave. Quigley's position as a teacher was secure, and there's no mention of any problems with his performance evaluations. That is not until teacher Joe Quigley stood up for lay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered students and sought the inclusion of sexual orientation in the school system's non-discrimination policy. These two examples should be a warning to teachers, at least in Oklahoma, where a teacher will find himself or herself among the growing ranks of the unemployed for teaching tolerance. Meanwhile, a teacher in Illinois makes hurtful homophobic slurs and he gets to keep his job. That's the one we talked about last night. Thanks, Gordon. It just doesn't stop, does it? Huh? It just doesn't stop. Man. Comedian Sarah Silverman has a proposal for ending world hunger. Sell the Vatican. She's got a new profanity-laced monologue. She cusses? Damn. In a new profanity-laced monologue making the rounds on YouTube, Sarah Silverman, S-A-R-A-H, you might check it out. It's out there in time for UN World Food Day, which is like tomorrow. Silverman suggests that it's time for the people to, quote, move out of your house. It's time for the Pope to move out of your house that is a city and use the proceeds to feed the world's poor. She says, quote, on an ego level alone, you will be the biggest hero in the history of ever. Sell the Vatican, feed the world, end quote. The Vatican clearly has no plans to follow suit. On Thursday, today, a spokesman declined to comment. But the Catholic League, the U.S. Catholic Civil Rights Organization, oh, please, denounced Sarah Silverman and cable broadcaster HBO for her, quote, obscene and filthy diatribe, end quote. In a statement, it noted that such an attack would never have been leveled against, say, the chief rabbi of Jerusalem or the state of Israel, and added that, quote, the Catholic Church operates more hospitals and feeds more of the poor than any private institution in the world, end quote. Yet the Reverend James Martin, a culture editor of the Jesuit magazine America, says Sarah Silverman may be onto something. Yeah. Remember what Jesus says? In an online article, Reverend Martin noted that Jesus himself told his followers to sell what they had and give it to the poor. Oh, goddammit. See, there we go again. That Jesus, that damn Jesus, he keeps just screwing up Christianity. Sell what you have and give it to the poor. Oh, for God's sake, so to speak. Mr. Martin, or Reverend Martin, wrote, quote, of course, Pope Benedict XVI couldn't sell any of the treasures of the Vatican the same way that your local archbishop couldn't sell off the cathedral at a whim. They are not his. They are the church's. And the church is not simply a hierarchy, but the entire people of God. End quote. But Reverend Martin added, still, perhaps Miss Silverman, in her postmodern, potty-mouthed way, is onto something, like Jesus was, you know, the same way. Sell the Vatican? Well, maybe not everything, but perhaps a statue or two? End quote. For the record, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization just released its annual report on the state of world hunger. And it says global food output will have to increase by 70% to feed a projected population of 9.1 billion in 2050. In 2004, the Vatican disclosed that just the real estate in Vatican City is worth about $1 billion. That was 5 years ago. Do they have a mortgage on that? Do you think the value went down, like people's houses? I doubt it. That doesn't include St. Peter's Basilica or the Sistine Chapel, which the Vatican termed priceless. Oh, my God. Can you imagine what the Catholic Church, if everything the Catholic Church owns, and why do they own it? All the art, all the incredible art, all the land, the buildings, the statuary, well, that would be art. Hell, just the robes. I mean, the Catholic Church, really, when you get right down to it, come on, guys, it is so gay. You know it as well as I do. I mean, these guys tripping around in robes and mitres and, oh, come on. Come on, admit it. It's okay. It's like a great big costume ball. Don't worry about it. The gay priests are fine. It's the pedophiles that are such an irritant, aren't they? The Catholic Church. So, yeah, Jesus said, easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter into the kingdom of God. Well, if that's the case, who's this crazy man that owned the pizza company? Which pizza company was that? Was it Domino's? The one that built a Catholic university? He's more Catholic than the Pope. He built a Catholic university. He was building a real estate development down in Florida, whatever. Supposing he took all this money from selling pizzas and gave the money to poor people or put it into co-ops where food could be grown. I mean, real food, not this greasy goddamn pizza that he sells, but real food. Tom Monaghan, is that who it was? What company was that? Is that Domino's? He's not even Italian. Yeah, the plan was about $500 million, if I remember. And that would run a lot of organic farms to feed poor folk, wouldn't it? But never mind. Tom Monaghan is trying to buy his way to Jesus's feet, and you know what, Tom? According to Jesus's own words, you ain't got an ice cube's chance in hell. Oh my God. And I remember when it was talked about, it was going to be, the town was going to be called Ave Maria, I think. And in the drugstores, no condoms, no birth control. Bill, Jesus, God, yeah. Well, Sarah Silverman's right. Sell the Vatican, feed the poor. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's always gonna be a delicacy.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy. Because liberal is a good word, it's more Mike Malloy.
You want to say anything else?
It didn't stop driving.
Wow! Push those buttons, Kathy! The back seat out. I put it on the ground. Yeah, stick around because after the next break, we may have the last moment with Bob that you shall ever hear on this program. 22 past the hour. Kate T. writes in, Mike, did you ever see the movie The Shoes of the Fisherman from 1972, I think, starring Anthony Quinn as the Pope? Sarah Silverman stole the plot of the movie. The Pope in the movie pledged the wealth of the Vatican to feed the hungry of the world and prevent World War III. Brilliant idea with a snowball's chance in hell. Miss Silverman cracks me up. And about selling the Vatican, Sue writes, why not sell it to feed the hungry? The Catholic Church sure has no problem selling off its many properties to pay the settlements for all the child molestation trials. Sue. Hugs back at you, Sue. Bruce writes, the Vatican belongs to the people of the church and not the Pope? The Pope doesn't hesitate to sell off the church in any diocese that doesn't keep their pedophile problem under wraps. They never tap into the billions of commercial real estate they own in the U.S. alone to pay judgments. And Dino, north of Toronto, writes, Mike, I teach at a Catholic high school north of Toronto, and I want to offer a contrast to what is happening to teachers in your country. I teach civics, where we discuss citizenship, government, politics, and civil rights. We have open discussions about gay marriage, which is legal in Canada, and students offer their views. In our school library, the librarian ordered some books which can be considered as gay literature at the request of some of our gay students. I wonder what would happen to our librarian if she was working in an American high school. I should point out that this not only speaks to the much more open-minded attitudes of Canadians, but the strength of our teachers' union. If our principal or school board tried to fire our librarian for this course of action, then she would be reinstated quite quickly. Where is the American teachers' union in the case you just discussed? Keep up the good work. I'm a huge fan. Regards, Dino, north of Toronto. Where's the teachers' union? Well, I don't know. I don't know if there's anything they can do. So the librarian at a Catholic high school in Toronto, at the request of gay students, ordered some gay books, and the sky did not open. Fire did not rain down on the school. The librarian did not open her mouth, and spiders and snakes came crawling out. My, my, my. I got an email today from Michael, who called in last night from New York. And it was a great email. It was very, very long. I would love to read it to you on the air, but it's too long. There are a couple of lines in here that I'm going to share with you a little bit later, that what he wrote. But when I read it this morning, you know, I thought, I think I'll send this on to my friend Bob Alexander just for the hell of it. So I wrote, interesting, and sent it to Bob. And I got an email from him about 8 hours later. A moment with Bob's. And he makes reference to what Michael wrote in his email, the one I sent on to Bob. So I'm going to share that with you. I'm going to share the moment with Bob when we come back. And this may be the last one. As a matter of fact, Bob says it's the last one. Okay. You know, I mean, we've had a real good run with Bob Alexander's writing. He is an excellent writer, as many of you have stated over the years. That he, how long has he been writing for? So with Bob, I guess it's not been that long. A couple of years, been about 2 years. Huh? Well, yeah, because I made in the last two trips I've made to Seattle, a year apart. We got together for dinner. About three. That long, huh? So, excuse me. Coming up after this break, when we come back, we're going to have what is probably, most likely, the last moment with Bob, and it's entitled The Elegy. So, stick around for that. And then, I just, since he references Michael's email from today that I forwarded to Bob, I will just quote a couple of things out of Michael's email, too. Ah, time moves on, right? So, perhaps we will find, well, nobody else could do a moment with, but most of you people are such good writers. I mean, good Lord. All right, we'll be back. Stick around, I'm Mike Malloy.
Get yourself
go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Do we have the music, maestro? Ah, there it is. And it's time once again for A Moment with Bob. Possibly the last Moment with Bob. Brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Hey, Mike. The reason I called the previous moment that I sent you the other day, titled A Possibly Penultimate Moment, was because the next one was going to be the last one. And that's this one. I was going to say essentially what Michael in New York wrote, but he nailed it. So there's no reason for the Department of Redundancy Department to issue a duplicate statement. All that's left now is to write the elegy. Almost everything I've written about has nibbled around the edges of the great, big, scary fact. And Mike in New York summed it up best when he wrote, quote, "The American system has lost its capacity for reform," end quote. The corporatocracy controls the institutions that need reformation, and they will not allow it. They own enough of our elected representatives to guarantee that any reform will be derailed. This country desperately needs a single-payer health care system. The majority of Americans want a single-payer health system and are willing to pay more taxes to get it. The majority. But our elected representatives are doing the bidding of their masters, and the health care industry is dictating how the deck chairs on the Titanic are going to be rearranged. To hell with all of us in steerage. The corporatocracy bought up all the lifeboats. The ascendancy of the dim-witted Ronald Reagan in 1981 and the abolishment of the Fairness Doctrine in 1987 set the stage for the corporatocracy's dominion over all. They would not have succeeded without the lies of Rush Limbaugh, Fox News, and the crazy Christians. They needed these mouthpieces to tell lies in order to control millions of stupid Americans. They knew the power they would wield when they controlled the minds of an entire class of poor white people. Described by the author James Lee Burke as those with the lowest self-esteem of any group in the Western Hemisphere. These are the people who blame Jews, Yankees, liberals, women, gays, brown and black people for their problems. Anyone besides themselves. These are the people who believe the devil is more real than God and the flames of hell roar under their feet. The men with the power to shut down the factories and outsource the jobs live in mansions. But the enemies are those who come ragged and hungry into the poor white's domain and ask for part of what the white man had been told was his by birth. The class war is a war between the have-nots and the have-nots, incited by those who have it all. No reasonable person would deliberately incite these people, but the corporatocracy is a psychopath. They believe they will be safe in their gated communities patrolled by hired Blackwater goons, so their mouthpieces continued to spread the racism, fear, and lies, and the corporate-controlled mainstream media did what they were told and allowed everything to go unchallenged. So here we are, a little more than a generation later, and America has been grotesquely distorted into something most of us could never have imagined. 46 years ago, John Kennedy got his head blown apart in Dallas, but today people with handguns and assault rifles attend rallies where Barack Obama will speak. I have felt that the country that I live in is not the one of my birth, but now I know that feeling is a lie. When we were very young, we were told lies about our country. Our parents, teachers, and religious leaders told us lies, and we believed them. We were little kids. What do we know? If you were white and somewhere in the middle class, it was safe and secure living in the bountiful empire. Television, the most powerful medium ever invented, affirmed the lies with every program and every commercial. Our government and our capitalist system was the finest in the world. All of our authority figures said so. And we believed them. We ate our Chiquita bananas at lunch, blissfully unaware that the United Fruit Company coerced our president into overthrowing a government so they could continue viciously exploiting the people of Guatemala. We were reaping the benefits of empire. We ate countries alive to gouge out their resources so that we could maintain the American dream on the cheap. Capitalism needs greater and greater profits. It needs a constant supply of cheap resources and cheap labor. The corporatocracy does not swear allegiance to anything except profit. There's no such thing as loyalty to people or country when it comes to capitalism. Everything is up for grabs. Starting with the Reagan Revolution, the unions were dismantled, but the labor still wasn't cheap enough. So George Herbert Walker Bush and Bill Clinton midwifed globalization via GATT and NAFTA, thus enabling the corporatocracy to roam the planet at will to exploit cheap labor. The corporatocracy has always been against anything that benefited the people. Social Security, labor unions, GI Bill, Medicare, and of course civil rights for anybody unless you're a white male, preferably rich. These few instances of liberal progress were abhorrent to the corporatocracy because they deviated from the course of capitalism's manifest destiny. They spent decades doing everything they can to either eliminate them outright or dilute them into ineffectual mush. The corruption of the American system by the corporatocracy is virtually complete. I believe we have passed the point where restoration is possible. The tipping point was when the Supreme Court installed George W. Bush as president. We knew then that our democratic republic had been taken away from us, and we did nothing. The media pacified most of us by going into overdrive with the message that this was a perfectly acceptable transfer of power, and we did nothing. We went on with our lives, went to work, picked up the kids from school, strolled through shopping malls, and denied that our government had been taken from us. Then came the attacks of September 11th. Then came the war in Afghanistan and Iraq. We knew the reasons the government gave for those things were lies. And we did nothing. Instead of a nationwide revolt against the regime that illegally took control of our country, we marched down the street. And this is the crazy part. We applied for a permit so we could legally protest against an illegitimate government. They were starting a war against Iraq based on lies, and we made sure we were the ones who followed the rules. Then we followed that up by sending email to the people who allowed the coup d'etat of December 2000 to take place. The idea we had as children and still carry around with us to this day about the United States of America is dead. We don't want to admit it, so we continue to do whatever it is we do to avoid going to the funeral. James Lee Burke described the tension created by that dissonance. He wrote, quote, "Psychoneurotic anxiety is almost untreatable because its causes are armor-plated and deep-seated down in the bottom of the id. At one time, patients who suffered from it were lobotomized with their full consent," end quote. The level of tension is not unlike what you feel if you have to open the door of an abandoned refrigerator in a vacant lot 5 days after a child has disappeared from the neighborhood," end quote. This is the nightmare, courtesy of the corporatocracy. Regards, Bob. Another moment with Bob, and possibly the last one. Brought to you by your friends at you know, I think the tipping point for Bob Alexander was when he asked people for donations and got them. People came through with several thousands of dollars so that he could buy hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of copies of Vince Bugliosi's book about indicting George W. Bush for murder. And he supervised himself and a couple other people to address those to district attorneys in all the counties where a soldier had died as a result of Bush's lies in Iraq. With a cover letter, it said, hey, here's the blueprint to indict him for murder. And I think he sent out 2,200, was it 2,200, 2,300, 2,400 of these books. You know how many answers he got? None. Well, he did get one from a district attorney someplace that said, well, I'll get back to you next year. That was the tipping point for Bob Alexander. I often wonder what my tipping point is. What's yours?
Yes, and how many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? Yes, and how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? Yes, and how many...
Liberal helping of truth, it's More Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour, and as promised, just a couple of lines here from what Michael in New York wrote. He called in last night. We talked for a while. He was the caller. We talked about socialism and communism, or capitalism, and so on and so forth. And I forwarded it on to Bob, and Bob wrote what he just wrote. But Michael wrote, so can capitalism be reformed? This is just a little piece out of a very, very, very long email. So can capitalism be reformed? Well, we're seeing the true potential for reform right now. It's pretty minimal. If right now we had a single-payer plan being seriously debated in Congress, I might have something different to say. But honestly, my belief is that the American system has lost its capacity for reform. All caps. No serious reform is on the table anywhere for any of the serious problems we currently have. Health care for all? Forget about it. Maybe a trigger if we're lucky. Banking and securities reforms? Forget about it. Wait till the next crash. Ultimately, we're heading for an even bigger crash. We are wholly owned subsidiaries of the major corporations here in America. Wait till the whole system falls apart and everyone is on the street to get any kind of reform if the crash doesn't lead to outright military dictatorship. From my point of view, a little capitalism is like a little cancer. It's ultimately going in one direction. It might be possible to slow it down, but time is not on our side. And then further on in the email, Michael writes, so what's my outlook for the U.S.? Bad. The fascism you mentioned is a real possibility, especially since there's less and less possibility of reform to make America livable for working people. Given the inability of the system to meet people's most basic needs, we will find a system increasingly willing to substitute pure police control for actual solutions. Quite frankly, I think most of us would be better off somewhere else. Probably just about anywhere in Western Europe, even given the language problems. I know that's where I'd rather be, but it's just not that easy. You can't just love it or leave it. They won't take us. We're the United States. They don't give us refugee status. But that may change. Michael.
Yow!
Yeah. Okay. Sarah in Brevard, North Carolina, writes about magic words. She writes, per Molly saying the blessing, you know, old man. My father, a very good man, was a Methodist minister for 50 years. My son, however, who grew up mostly in Manhattan and San Francisco, was not exposed to any religion. When he was about 4 or 5, we went home to Georgia for Thanksgiving. As we sat down with our relatives to eat our fabulous feast, my father said grace. When he finished, my son inquired, "Papa Sam, why do you say those magic words?" No one chuckled but me. But I think my laughter was drowned out by the gasps. My father just said, "Time to slice the turkey." Sarah. That's cool. I like that. And Ron in Briarwood, New York, regarding the judge down in New Orleans, he said he won't marry interracial couples because the children are, it's just terrible, terrible for the children. Mike, Judge Bardwell tried to justify denying marriage to an interracial couple by feigning concern for what happens to the children of such couples. I can think of the child of one interracial marriage who became president of the United States of America and a Nobel Peace Prize winner, but I guess that doesn't count. Ron and Briarwood. Yeah, well, you know, the mentality of some of these people is just, you know, it's in the toilet. I mean, it really is, Ron and Michael and Bob and, you know, in the toilet. I think the number is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, the number of Americans who simply no longer can think, they can't evaluate, the critical thinking is gone. I think people are terrified, they're scared, they're angry. And I said a couple of weeks ago, I agree with what a lot of people are writing, and it's not just to this program. Oh my God, you can go online, you can read some pretty good stuff, some real essay stuff. As a matter of fact, coming back next hour, I've got a little bit of Noam Chomsky. He was just recently interviewed. Do you know when that interview was? October 6th? Okay. I want to play a little bit of that for you when we come back. Noam Chomsky and his take on right-wing media. Also, I have a nice thing I want to share with you here from Kay. And I have a report from our economic affairs correspondent, Prairie 2. So we have lots of stuff left, and we'll take some phone calls next hour, too. Doesn't that sound exciting? Oh, yeah. According to Reuters news agency, the United States is now the most admired country globally, thanks largely to the star power of President Barack Obama and his administration. According to a new poll, what's really remarkable, said the founder of the National Brand Index, who conducted this poll, measured the global image of 50 countries each year. What he says is, what's really remarkable is that in all my years studying national reputation, I've never seen any country experience such a dramatic change in its standing as we see for the United States in 2009. It was in the tank during the Bush years, is what he's saying. Yeah. All right, we'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. Got an email here from our economic affairs correspondent, Prairie 2. So let me share it with you. Initial unemployment claims were down slightly again last week, about 10,000 less than the previous week. Continuing claims were also down as another 100,000 people fell off the far end of the eligibility rolls and into poverty. Foreclosures continue to increase along with bankruptcies. The really poor don't bother with bankruptcy, of course, and no longer have a house to lose. If they can keep the car going from where they camp at night to the part-time job and then over to the food pantry, and pray the pantry isn't out of food, all that makes a good day for the working poor. There is a credit card available now from one of those predatory banks in South Dakota that charges 79% interest. Unregulated free market capitalism is alive and well in South Dakota. The reason you get all the predatory credit card offers from South Dakota is because of a landmark Supreme Court ruling. It was one of the first of many steps the so-called conservative court has taken to make America the land of the corporation. This ruling disemboweled state regulation by allowing corporations to steal across state lines with impunity. South Dakota brought in a lot of jobs by doing away with all regulation, but now those jobs are disappearing. These companies are sending the jobs to India, or they simply disappear completely as the economy is driven into the ground. The state of North Dakota, on the other hand, owns its own bank and loans money at cost. And since they create their own money the same way the Fed does, they can loan money for as little as 1%. Why emigrate to Sweden when there's North Dakota? Pray too. Okay. There's North Dakota. Yeah! What else we got here? Yeah, I'll share with you what Kay sent in a little bit later. Oh my God, the stack is just too damn big. Our military affairs correspondent, Sharon, just puts a lot of strain on her, some of the stuff that she researches and sends into the program. This is from Army Times via the Associated Press from yesterday. I'll just share with you what it says. The father of an Indiana National Guardsman who fatally shot himself inside a movie theater said Tuesday that the families of service members returning home from war need to closely watch them for signs of stress. Specialist Jacob Sexton, 21, showed no signs of being suicidal before shooting himself in the head, the guardsman's father said. The father said, quote, "We just need to watch these boys and the girls coming back home. Something's just not right. Too much is happening," end quote. Muncie police said 21-year-old Jacob Sexton had argued with theater employees on Monday night over having to show identification to see the R-rated horror comedy Zombieland. 20 minutes into the film, a friend handed Sexton a 9mm handgun at the guardsman's request, and he then shot himself in the head, police said. Sergeant Mike Engel told the Star Press that witnesses told officers that an employee at the Muncie Theater asked Sexton for ID and that he replied that he had killed 18 people while in the military. Sergeant Engel said it appeared Sexton and some of his companions had been drinking. About 8 other people were in the theater at the time of the shooting. No one else was hurt, police said. The guardsman's father said the shooting wasn't an accident. He said Sexton's younger brothers, also at the theater, said the guardsman told a friend to duck. And when the friend hesitated, Sexton pushed the friend's head down before the shooting. Jeffrey Sexton, the father, said he and his wife Barbara had not noticed any signs of stress. The father said, quote, "This all came as a complete surprise to us. He'd been happy since the day he joined. He was planning on reenlisting." End quote. And then, of course, I guess you've heard that the U.S. Army now is going after middle school students. This is in Kansas. Wichita School District in South Central Kansas is one of few school districts nationwide offering middle school programs based on the junior ROTC curriculum. The Army is collaborating with the National Association of School Boards to develop a so-called JROTC Plus program that would use the high school JROTC curriculum as a basis for a middle school program. That's according to Army Junior Reserve Officer Training Corps Director Colonel John Vanderbleek. He said, quote, "We want to reach students at that age before they make decisions that put them at risk." What? The Army plans to fund a pilot program next school year, and the money will most likely go to an existing program like the one in Wichita. Kansas State Board of Education member Dave Dennis said he plans to lobby for Wichita's existing program to be selected as the Army's pilot program. Board of Education member Dave just loves this. He said, quote, "The Army's got a lot deeper pockets than education," end quote. The Wichita program faced some opposition when it began in 1997 because of concerns about military influence and recruiting. But Colonel Vanderbleek said little opposition is expected to the national program now. Yeah. Oh, well. That's a good thing, right? Joining the military, thinking about it, getting your mind corrupted about this when you're middle school. What's middle school now, Kathy? Is that fourth, fifth, and sixth grade? Fifth, sixth, and seventh? Depends on where you are. Here in Georgia, it's what, fourth, fifth, and sixth? Five, six, seven. A fifth grader. That would be a 10-year-old, and then an 11-year-old, and then a 12-year-old. Being indoctrinated for American imperialism with a gun. Jesus God, it's just, I don't know, folks. I don't know. Man, oh man, oh man. Listen, I haven't mentioned this here recently, but it may be seriously time for you to consider subscribing to the podcast of this program. It costs you $7.95 a month or under $60 a year. If you do the yearly plan, as we said before, it's 25 cents a program. This is a two-bit program, so it's literally 25 cents a program. We really, 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 really need those subscriptions now. The people speaking differently from mass media are getting fewer and fewer. We really are. And it has nothing to do with what people want to hear. You know, the majority of Americans want single-payer health care. So what? Majority of Americans do not want us to send more soldiers to die in Afghanistan. So what? Right? The American majority of Americans would like to have their jobs come back from China and India and Mexico and North Vietnam or Vietnam and Korea and wherever else. But, you know, it doesn't matter what the majority of Americans want. And it does not matter how many millions of people would like to be able to turn on the radios and find a station, no matter where they are, and listen to liberal or progressive talk radio. That doesn't matter. So there are maybe six of us left. I'm talking about commercial over-the-air radio. I'm not talking about Pacifica, and I'm not talking about satellite services, although this program is carried on satellite, Sirius and XM. I'm just saying. Over-the-air broadcasting, we're down to maybe five, as a matter of fact, because one or two of the so-called progressives are about as progressive as a lump of lard. So, if you want to keep this program on the air, and I hope you do, you know, we're doing what we can, and we need you to do what you can. So, consider, really consider subscribing. Go to MikeMalloy.com. The information is there.
Thank you.
standing up to the flying monkey right. It's Mike Malloy.
This portion of the Mike Malloy program is brought to you by It's Up to Us Alone, featuring Ed Asner. Go to usalone.com for information on where to hear the debut of this dramatic new radio play in your area.
Is that what the war's about? Because I don't understand, but what kind of a man should have to sacrifice his life for?
All right, let's do, before we go to your phone calls, 21 past the hour, this is from San Francisco on the 6th of this month, about a week and a half ago. Noam Chomsky, linguist and political philosopher, criticizes right-wing media outlets, which he describes as delivering a message of paranoia and economic populism comparable to what the Nazis did during the Weimar Republic.
I'm not really thinking about the entertainment aspect of the media, though yes, it's significant. I'm thinking about the part that has substantive content, crazy content, but it is substantive. It does give answers. I mean, the people who for the last 30 years have seen their wages, income stagnate or decline, benefits decline, services decline, there's nothing for the children, you know, the world's out of control. These are the people who on polls, maybe 80% of them, say the country's going in the wrong direction, the government's run by the few and the special interests, not the people, and so on. You know, they're not wrong. This is all happening to them, and the answers that they're getting from, say, you know, Rush Limbaugh, Michael Savage, the rest of them, are, well, we have an answer. The rich liberals own everything. They own the corporations. They run the government. They run the media. And they don't care about people like you. They don't care about the flyover people between the East Coast and the West Coast. They only care about giving everything you work for away to, you know, to illegal immigrants or, you know, gays or something. So we got to protect ourselves from them.
That's the message that is put out there 24/7, coast to coast, border to border. Here's the second half of Chomsky's statement.
And furthermore, they run the government. When they put up a health program, it's not to give you health, it's to kill your granny. You know? And that's an answer to something. It's a terrible answer, but it is an answer. If you do suspend disbelief, you forget about what's happening in the world, really, it's a coherent answer. Now, they're not hearing anything else. And the memory that comes to my mind, again, I don't want to press the analogy too hard, but I think it's worth thinking about, is late Weimar Germany. There were people with real grievances. The Nazis gave them an answer. It's the fault of the Jews and the Bolsheviks, and we got to protect ourselves from them. And that'll take care of your grievances. And we know what happened. Germany in the 1920s was, you know, the most civilized, the peak of Western civilization. In the arts and the sciences, highly democratic, functioning democratic institutions. A decade later, it was, you know, the pits of human history. Again, the analogy is not close, but it's frightening. And unless an answer can be given to these people, unless they can be led to understand what's really happening to them, we could be in for trouble.
The problem, of course, and I don't know the context. I don't have it right in front of me of this interview with Chomsky. But the problem is, you know, I get people who listen to this program all the time who call the program or send emails, and you've heard my frustration. They appear to be so unknowing of what's going on. I mean, take a look last summer at the teabaggers showing up at these town hall meetings where people, the members of Congress really went out, the Democrats did anyway, really went out there to try to answer questions. I don't know what their answers would have been. Just like Chomsky says, people are looking for answers. But you look at the teabaggers, and their heads have been so filled. They are so frightened of everything. The average Republican, the average conservative is scared of his own shadow, just terrified. We had 8 years of this terror being pumped in about Islamic bombers or whatever. Jobs are gone. Healthcare is not going to happen. You know it as well as I do. The only thing left, the employer of last resort, as usual, is the military. And now they're going into middle school. For Christ's sake, they're going after 10-year-olds. 10-year-olds. So, you know, Chomsky is right that when people get that freaked out and that ignorant and that unwilling to just educate themselves a little bit, along comes a demagogue. And in the case of the United States of America, 2010, 2009, we have demagogues across the radio spectrum all day long and the television spectrum all day long. It never goddamn stops. It's just pumped out all day long. And people listen to it. Because it does fill a void where they should be getting information for themselves. They should be finding out what the truth is. They're content, millions of people content, to listen to the lies and the garbage and accept it as truth. Because the Limbaughs and the Hannitys and the Becks and the rest of these swine feel they're... They do it for sport. They want to see Obama assassinated. They want to see civil war in this country because they think they will rise above it and just be able to watch.
Catheter, siphon up your life. Talk radio, I love you.
Outrage. Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. I may wait till tomorrow with what Kay wrote because we're running out of time here, and I do want to get some of your calls in. So let's go right to the phone calls here. Wayne is driving in St. Louis, listening on XM. Wayne, welcome to the program.
Mike, I've been trying to keep a more balanced approach to where I get my information. Actually, I was challenged to do that by a good friend of mine. He said essentially the same thing that you do, that I get all my information from the conservative side, and I don't listen up. Well, obviously he's wrong. I get my newspapers and everything. And anyway, to make a long story short, I've been listening to you guys over here on the left side here for the last couple of weeks. Frankly, my friend, I have to say, I'm not getting anything from you guys but a lot of invective and pejorative. I really have to take exception with you.
Well, wait a second. What do you get from right wing talk radio?
Well, I'm trying to get.
Now play right, or I'll have to move on. What do you get from right wing talk radio?
I don't get people calling.
No. Come on. I didn't ask you what you don't get. I'm going to give you one more chance, Wayne, then I'm going to move on.
What do you get
from right-wing talk radio?
Well, they call the news articles that I might not ordinarily get a chance to get to. I mean, Rush Limbaugh, okay, let's take Rush for an example. Everybody gave Rush about a ration of crap about the magic Negro.
Wait a second. Wayne, listen. You've got to listen to me.
I'm listening to you.
All right. Don't listen. Wayne. God damn it. Wayne, get in the game here, pal. All right. I'm telling you, you said something, and I'm asking you to clarify it. What news do you get? What do you get? What a value do you get from right-wing talk radio? You said, let's use Rush Limbaugh as an example, and then you went to the magic Negro thing. Now, I'm going to give you one more chance. What do you get of value from right-wing talk radio?
What did I I got from that was that I got from the whole Magic Negro thing was that was a term that was coined.
Okay, never mind. Wayne, do me a favor. Don't call me again, okay? Just don't bother. I've got people who want to make a coherent statement. You're going to sit there like a typical right-winger and talk about the Magic Negro. I mean, you're out of your goddamn mind. You really are. Your brains have been sucked out like so many of you people on the right. You know, I'm not trying to piss you off, pal, but facts are facts, okay? You call my program. And you have the audacity to riff on something. I don't even know what the hell you were talking about, well, left wing, you know, all the invective. I think you used the word invective. Do you know what that word means? I don't know. Maybe you didn't use that word. But anyway, then I ask you for just an example of what you get from right wing talk radio. And you come up with the Magic Negro. First of all, that's about a year old. Secondly, it is about as deeply racist. I mean, why don't you just say the N-word? Why don't you just put a white sheet on your goddamn head and go party with Rush Limbaugh? Don't call me again. Ever. As a matter of fact, right now, switch off this program. Get it off. I don't allow people like you to listen to me. Get it off. Thank you. Jesus. God, where did these people... See, every single time. Every single time I put one of these freaks on, this is what happens. Now, you folks have been listening to this program for 7, 8, 9, 10 years. Am I lying? No, I'm not. Every single time. And these are the people that are absolutely participating in the utter and complete destruction of this country. And I just wonder, when it finally, regardless of what Chomsky said, when it finally washes over them, when somebody like that caller loses his house or loses his job or loses his health insurance or when Blackwater comes for his gun or when he is herded into a enclosure because somebody doesn't like the way he looks and they're afraid he might be a fifth columnist, somebody on the right, what is he going to do? What's he going to do? Is at that point, are people like that going to say, Rush, Rush, God damn, you really lied to me, didn't you? Sean, Glenn. And of course, the people that fill the right wingers' heads with this garbage just sit back and laugh at them. Oh my God. You know, I knew Sean Hannity here in Atlanta for 3 miserable goddamn years. We attended the same events together. I have talked to this freak. Sean Hannity is the most vapid, empty-headed little prick I have ever met in my life. Everything that he says is either a right-wing or Republican party talking point. Sean Hannity, I had to put up with him because we were in the same radio community. He worked for the little WGST when it went Clear Channel. I worked for WSB when it was Cox Communications, and we attended the same events, we spoke at the same events, and he was just an empty-headed little snot. And nothing's changed. I mean, my God. And yet he sits there, along with Limbaugh, along with Beck, along with the rest of these crazy, miserable bastards who want to see the country go up in flames. And fills the heads of people like my last caller with garbage. Just garbage. And the caller, it never occurs to him. It never occurs to him to sit goddamn down and do your own research. Don't go near WorldNet Daily. Don't go near Fox News. Don't go near Free Republic. Don't go near those websites. Do some real independent research. Yeah, like these people know what that means. But I've tried. If you listen to this program over the years, you know I've tried. Kathy, it's not sport. Don't put any more people like that on hold for me. I've had enough. I'm at the end of the line with these people. I mean, I've been doing this for 24 years, and I have yet to hear any conservative or Republican or right-winger ever, ever in 2.5 decades, ever be able to make a coherent, not just argument, but statement, point of view.
Well, he told me he wanted to talk about ROTC in the middle school.
Yeah, well, okay. It's not your fault. I'm just saying, you know, and they lie. You know, they completely lie. All these freaks lie. I want to talk about this or that. And then when you get them on, I've been listening to, you know, don't. Look, let me, I used to invite you right-wingers to call in, but it's a whole different game now. I don't want anything to do with any of you. So please, don't call, don't listen, save your emails. I mean, the people that write in with these, what you think are just these excruciatingly cool, insulting emails, you dumbasses, I have been insulted by people like you for 25 years. Most of you can't even spell your hate emails. I mean, your hate emails are just so full of misspellings. Spare me. Just pretend like I don't exist. In your world, I don't. Okay? And I'll do the same for you. Just go the F away, please. Please, I'm asking you. I'm really asking you, all right? You cowardly sons of bitches. I had an event, and I'm going to say it. When I was in San Francisco when was it? The 2nd? 3rd? When was it? The 8th? Before I went out there, I got a call from the San Francisco Police Department and the program director out there. And they had at the radio station, they had received in the mail a picture of the venue, a Google aerial shot of the venue where I was going to appear, and then a face, my face, and a target over it. And it said, "This is where you die, MF-er." Well, you know, I look at that like the gibbering of a goddamn 5-year-old. I don't know what that person wanted. I don't know if that person wanted me not to show up, but I just kept hoping that cowardly little snaky son of a bitch would come by Yoshi's where we did the gig. I just wanted to meet him. And when my escort held his arms, I was going to smash his goddamn face in. I was just going to beat him to a bloody pulp. For sport. But of course, he never showed up. Never showed up. This is where you die, MF-er. Really? Why didn't you come by and try? But this is what I mean about right-wingers. Every single one of them essentially is a coward. Every Republican, every conservative, every right-winger is a coward and ignorant. This is where you die, MF-er. Really? Okay. I'll say it again. I come from a neighborhood where the saying was, if you want to get ass, you got to bring ass.
He said, boy, I've been in your shoes once or twice myself. I've got 100,000 watts running through this microphone. And I can let your message ring loud and clear. Well, tomorrow I'd be gone, because you can't say that on the radio. I'd really like to help you out. That's just the way.
This portion of the Mike Malloy program is brought to you by It's Up to Us Alone, featuring Ed Asner. Go to usalone.com for information on where to hear the debut of this dramatic new radio play in your area. Thanks to our crew, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bruce Enberg, Kate Petrini, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and our executive producer and engineer, Kathy Bay. Yeah, seriously, right-wingers, conservatives, Republicans, you turn my stomach, you really do. And You have nothing to say on this program, nothing. So not only are you not allowed to call in anymore, you may not listen. I forbid you from listening to this program. Huh. There, that'll work. Mike is in Findlay, Ohio. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Actually, I've got just a favor of you, actually. If you could, I find myself constantly explaining to people when I get in discussions about what exactly a public health option is, how it's going to affect them, how it's going to be paid for, and...
Okay, public health option means that the federal government will collect the money, just like they do with Medicare, and pay the claims. And somebody has a public option, can go to any doctor, any hospital, anything they want to do. The people who pay for it are the people who buy the premiums. That's what I have to say to people. It is not national health care. The public option will include companies who will compete for the business. However, it will be managed by the federal government. So just like Medicare is, just like Social Security is, the overhead cost on Medicare is about 2 or 3%. The overhead cost on private insurance companies is anywhere from 25 to 35%. So the best thing to say is that, you know, if you want to buy into the public option, it's not going to be there, though. You should start by saying forget about it. The Democrats won't ever let it happen because they are owned, as the Republicans are, by the medical industrial complex. So the question is moot, but that's the answer.
Okay, well, I appreciate it.
Is that it?
That's it.
Oh, hey, by the way, my uncle used to be the sheriff there of Hancock County.
Yeah, the woman that was screening the call said they actually had some family up here.
Yeah, oh, yeah, still do. Still have lots of family. I have a lot of cousins up there. A lot of, have an aunt,
you know,
cousins.
You know what it's like for me to live in a red city, being a liberal, so.
Well, Findlay, yeah, it always was conservative. I remember the newspaper there years ago used to be called the Republican Courier. I don't know what it's called now. But,
no, it's just the Courier now, but it was the
Republican Courier. But, yeah, so, you know, I've said a lot on this program. I've got law enforcement people in my family. Well, it was my uncle, Jack, who was, he was deputy sheriff there for, oh, Jesus, I don't know, 30 years. And then it was an elected office. Then he got elected sheriff. And it's hard ass, I'll tell you. Well, anyway, thanks, Mike. I appreciate you checking in. Call again sometime, okay?
Thanks, buddy.
All right, take care. Homeboy. Findlay, Ohio. They've been hit hard with floods. The Blanchard River that runs through Findlay, the past, I think twice in the past, what, Kathy, 5-6 years, it has flooded, I mean, seriously, just absolutely got into downtown Findlay, got close to where my old immigrant grandfather used to have his gas station and tire store on North Main Street. Oh, my God, stop it, Malloy, stop it. You're running a radio program. Ah, Robert is driving to Missouri. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Mike. I've been enjoying listening to you here on hold. I appreciate how you guys have that set up.
Oh, okay. You can hear everything?
Yeah, I mean, with not having to, you know, I can hit mute on the radio and still hear everything. I like that.
Cool.
But hey, before I get to what I called about, what you were saying about the ROTC in Wichita?
Yeah.
I grew up in Kansas.
Yeah.
And the answer to your question, middle school in Kansas is 7th and 8th grade.
Oh, 7th and 8th. Okay.
Sometimes sixth grade, and it doesn't surprise me that they're trying that in Wichita. When I was in high school in the late 80s and early 90s, Wichita was talking about switching over to magnet schools, and I think they did that,
mm-hmm.
which is like, you know, where if you want to be a lawyer, they have so many students there. It's a huge town.
Right.
If you want to be a lawyer, there's a high school for you. If you want to be a mechanic, there's a high school for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it seems like what you're talking there is that they're trying to start up maybe a magnet school for the military now, too.
Well, not a magnet school. The junior ROTC program has been around for a long time. ROTC, of course, is the college level. Junior ROTC is high school level. And now what they're trying to do, the military, in order to make sure it's like the Catholics used to say, give me a child till he's six, I'll give you a Catholic for life. And what the military is trying to do, since we don't have a draft, is to capture the minds of the boys. I don't think they're interested in the girls, but capture the minds of the boys as young as they can get them. You know, with their goddamn video games and their marching and, oh, look, here's a Hummer and, you know, all this stuff. What they leave out is the fact that, now listen, if you do join the military and you survive, you know, chances are you're going to get killed. But if you do survive, you may have an arm gone or a leg gone, or you may be crazy for the rest of your life. Crazy in the sense of being afraid. Noises will make you. You might beat your spouse. You might be ugly and mean and hateful to your child. See, they leave that part out. And that's the part that drives me crazy. Crazy, Robert. It just, you know, to go after kids like that, to take the military indoctrination down to that age level, at a time in the history of this country when we should be abandoning, dissolving our military. We should bring every goddamn soldier home, pay him whatever he has coming, give him medical care and education for the rest of his life, and end standing armies. The founders of this country warned against it. We have enough nukes to blow up the whole goddamn solar system. We don't need soldiers and guns and howitzers and cannons and jet planes and bombs and napalm. Well, that's a hell of a note to end the program. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Is the art.